Blog Talk Radio.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Of all the grounding studies, the one that really got our attention is called Electric Grounding Improves Vagal Tone in Preterm Infants. In the study, 26 premature babies in an NICU were connected to grounding wires. The heart rates of the grounded infants stabilized, and their vagal tone, a critical measure of infant health, increased by 67% with grounding.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Have you looked at the price of Bitcoin lately? Cryptocurrencies are the hottest financial investment right now. Well, what if you can get free Bitcoin fractions by having an app on your phone or PC? Introducing Lolli, a website that rewards you with free Bitcoin pieces with your online purchases. You purchase from one of thousands of companies like Chewy, Old Navy, Groupon, and others. You get a percent of your purchase back in Bitcoin. Use my link on freedomizerradio.live or find me on Facebook for your special link to get started. Lolli, earn free Bitcoin while you shop.
Okay, one more time. This is your foot. This is shoes. This is your foot in shoes.
I can't move.
Any questions?
A little help.
This public service announcement brought to you by Zero Shoes. Feel the freedom, feel the fun, feel the world in Zero Shoes.
Freaks, outsiders, weirdos, the wallflowers, oddball loser, fish out of water, speak up, talk quieter. We are different. There's no arguing. It's a fact. A patchwork of flaws, we grow and adapt. We're funky, unconventional, see life through kaleidoscope eyes. In a field full of clovers, with our four leaves, we bask in blue skies. Flaws are natural. Our imperfections, our weaknesses, our scars. There is a misfit in all of us. We just have to be brave enough to embrace who we are.
Hello, friends and listeners, to this fine Saturday, depending on, or Sunday, if you're listening through Mix 105 Radio, Indianapolis Internet Radio. This is Barefoot is Legal Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we are dedicated to promoting the rights, legalities, and legalities of living the barefoot lifestyle, as well as sharing stories and providing empowerment information, and just, you know, all around just discussing the barefoot lifestyle and things that kind of sometimes go with it, come with it, and whatever other random thoughts.
Of it.
Yeah, whatever other random thoughts pop into our brains while we're in the middle of it. If you've been listening, you know a straight conversation is pretty much not possible with Miss Phoenix and I. I am the host. I'm Audrey with Miss Phoenix. Say hello, Phoenix.
Hello. I hope you're all enjoying your weekend. The weather is starting to warm up, but, you know, there's been some dips here and there. Obviously, depending on where you're from, the weather may be vastly different or greatly different.
Super windy here today.
Yeah, not as windy as it has been, I don't think, the past couple shows we had where we even had, like, lights flickering and stuff.
Nah, it's not that bad. Just make it a little bit chilly.
We got up to, like, 85 degrees at one point this week when I went out on Thursday. And I think it got about the same temperature the day before Wednesday. Right now it's below 60, but not horrible at all, really. I mean, it's just like, where's the 80 back?
Yeah.
But what's actually funny is because even yesterday it was, we did have more of a rainier day. Oh, I have a story to tell with that. But later, or like in a second or whatever, I don't know. But, where was I going with this? My partner, he showed on Snapchat, like, his snap memories of, like, 2 years ago today, it was snowing.
Oh.
Or, like, yesterday,
Right.
It was, like, that 2 years ago today, like, thing, and yesterday, it was, like, oh, my gosh, so we're hanging out with friends, like, it was snowing 2 years ago, and, like, literally, just the day before, we had 80-degree weather, and we had really warm rain.
I remember that, actually, because it was,
funny, yeah. Well, I remember, not even just 2 years ago, I remember even a little bit longer, I can't do the math right now, oh gosh, because I've been out of school for, this May will be the third year since I graduated high school, so my sophomore year, it was freezing during our late April prom. Because we had gone at the end of April. And, like, literally the week before that, it was, like, snowing, flurrying the entire week. Now, it didn't, like, accumulate or anything because, like, the ground was, like, was just warm enough and maybe had, like, an inch at most and it was just
right.
More, like, speckled rather than, like, everything covered. But I remember I, like, snowed the whole week before and I remember, like, it was cold and just be, like, so annoyed when taking pictures because it's just, like, so, like, dreary and dead outside.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what is this? But I'm very happy
this
to say.
Oh, hi ho.
Because it was, like, April 27th, I think, my sophomore year. I don't know why. We can blame this on why I remember dates so weirdly. But numbers stick. Names, little yikes, to be honest there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, because it's only the 22nd, and so it's, like, weird that we're already having nicer weather.
Yeah.
So I'm just so glad, though, because it's so beautiful outside. Even when it's, you know, under 60 degrees like it is now, it's still beautiful because it's, like, the life is just a sprung in, you know?
Yeah, it's beautiful out. And, like, the greens are greener, and the trees are blooming, flowers growing, you know, pushing up. It's just been lovely outside, and you know, when I went hiking Wednesday, it was just
barefoot, I assume.
of course. Yes, I did.
For those of you that don't know, Audrey only had to put shoes on like 3 times this winter. Last winter. Sorry.
Once this winter.
You're right.
Ha ha.
My brain. I was thinking backtracking on time a little too much.
Apparently. But anyway, yeah, so we had to, I was out hiking. It was just so, like, it was so much greener than even the week before when I'd gone.
Yeah.
Wednesdays has been kind of my day to be able to get out.
Yeah.
And it was just so much greener. And
I feel like I'm just missing it because it's always for me, like, Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you're probably able to go earlier in the day, too. I can't get out until 5:30.
It depends. It depends on my body. It depends on, like, I'll be honest. Well, because that's the thing, too, and not to interrupt you, but I think this is something a lot of I know for me with, like, autism and a lot of people with ADHD, like yourself, Audrey, probably can relate to this, where sometimes if I have the time earlier in the day, I still have to, like, prepare myself to be able to, like, drive because it's so overstimulating if you're not in, like, a leveled headspace, you know?
Yeah.
And so if I'm, you know, and it's been overstimulating, I'll be honest, past couple weeks with some stuff going on. So, I mean, really past the whole, all of Pisces season, oh my gosh, thank God we're out of that.
I'm so glad I met my only goal last week after Monday's lunch was survive the week.
Yeah.
We had a teacher, she'd been on her way to, like, she was already going to take the summer off. I don't take the summer off because it drops your income too much for my liking. But, plus, we don't do anything all summer. Like, we'll go out a couple trips, so I just need a couple days, you know.
Yeah.
Weekends are great for that. But anyway, she had decided she wasn't coming back after lunch. I don't know her exact reasonings, and those are hers to know, but it was just made it a stressful week as all.
Yeah, and it's no disrespect to her, but.
No, not at all. If that's, honestly, if that's what she needed for her mental health, good on you.
But I'm sure.
But, like, we didn't expect it, so it was like.
Yeah, there's a little bit of unpredictability, and when you're already dealing with ADHD and overstimulated, it's like,
Yeah, it was already a crazy day. We're like, oh, what? And then the whole week was that way, so it was just intense. But, yeah, when I got out Wednesday, I was walking and I found this, like, hidden little, almost like a natural pool thing. It was so neat.
Yeah.
And, I was, of course, going to inspect it because why wouldn't you?
Curious little ADHD goblin.
I'm a little friggin', I am of the fae. I have to see where I came from. What is this? Curiosity is will be my downfall one day. But anyway, it almost was Wednesday. So I'm checking this thing out, not realizing I'm about to step on some slippy rocks. And I started to slip down. And, first of all, like, my head was going straight towards some rocks. So I had to, like, do this funky panic twist thing with my body. And I was falling, but, like, I was able to grip my toes into these rocks to keep myself from falling. And I thought, like, someone brought up when I was telling the story before I got to the gripping my toes part, telling me, oh, I bet you wish you'd had shoes on. I was like, absolutely not, because I would have fallen. I would have laid in the water and everything in my pack would have been ruined.
You probably would have broken your ankle too, let's be real.
And my tailbone and my back, and I'd have been stranded waiting for somebody to come rescue me out of the woods. Listen, when I fall, I go big, okay? And then I can't go home because I'm stuck. So I was like, but if I had been wearing shoes, I would not have been able to grip my toes to stop myself from falling. Now, I twisted my knee some more, but it's already jacked, and I have an MRI coming up on the second anyway. So, I mean, at least it happened before the MRI, right? You know, so I don't have to have another one because insurance is going to be like, no.
And also, let's be honest, a normal, able-bodied, no chronic health issues or muscle issues or anything like that, disc issues, barefooter probably wouldn't have even had that same experience.
Probably not.
So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They probably would have been able to, you know what I mean? Because, like, you know, not, you know, saying it like, oh, you're completely physically just useless. That's obviously not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have your own physical, you know, health issues that are going to already have caused a lot of issues with your mobility over time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, your body isn't going, with having knee issues already, your body isn't going to be as flexible to those things.
Right.
As adaptable. And so the thing, too, is, like, people need to realize that, like, not all barefooters have the same body. And so
nobody has the same body.
Yeah. But especially I feel like people just, like, since they don't understand barefooting, they just, like, try to lump us into this category for, like, sake of easiness or whatever, for their own sake or whatever, even though it's just ignorant. And so it's like, yes, you may have had, like, this injury, but, like, would that have happened most likely to another person how can we really say?
See, I don't know. That was a lot of algae on them rocks. And it was slippy.
Okay.
Like, it was a close one, even for me. And I
have quite a bit of experience with falling, okay?
Well, does that mean, too, like, the damage that you, like, most often done to your knee?
Well, and I already have,
I already common for other people.
Right, well, and I already have it jacked up to the point where they've already ordered and scheduled an MRI, so that tells you,
it was going to hurt me either way.
Yeah.
But I could. It could have been a lot worse. And the way I would have landed, I would have been sitting in about a foot of water. And I take a backpack with me whenever I go hiking with my snacks and my journal and whatever. My phone was in the pocket.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, my phone would have been ruined. I would have had no way to, like,
call for help.
And this is literally, and this is like not off the path, but not a frequently traveled
path. Not one of those obvious paths.
Right. Like, it just, you could tell, you know, nobody. I walked by nobody on my hike, okay? And it was
less traveled, yeah.
Literally. It was like 80 degrees. So, you know, there were people there. The parking lot at the place was packed. They just didn't go to where I happened to be, okay?
Yeah.
So, like, who knows how long I would have been there. And it was already starting to get dark. But anyway, so I happened to be on the phone with my sister. I had AirPods in, so my hands were free, you know, so I was able to catch myself as well. But I made her stay on the phone with me. She'd only called for a quick second, right? And I was like, oh, no, you're staying with me until I make it to my car, so we know that I make it to my car. I was out typically on a typical day about 30 minutes from my car. Took me an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Because, like, I just had to keep stopping. I sat down at one point, and I was like, this is bad. I already feel it locking up. Like, it's going to take me longer. I'm like, no, I got to keep moving it. If I had been wearing shoes, I would have probably been knocked out, face down in the water, and died. I know I'm dramatic, but literally.
But you also
it was the way I was falling, there would have been no way for me to stop it.
Yeah, well, and I already know and the reason I brought up, like, you know, having your own issues and how, like,
mm-hmm.
you're not your typical good-kneed, good-backed person, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think some people, too, when they hear these stories and they're ignorant, they're just like, see, this is why you don't do that. No. And also, I've seen how your knee looked beforehand. It was already swollen. You showed me the pictures. You showed me your knee. Like,
yeah.
I can also say, too, like, that's not a normal thing. And obviously, you're not being dramatic from what I can see.
No, that means you saw. I took a picture of it after.
But it may sound dramatic to other listeners that aren't familiar with your issues and things like that.
It was
also, too, like, you know. Get over it. Like
it went from about the size of a grapefruit to the size of a cantaloupe. Swelling's gone down a little bit since, but it's still pretty, it hurts. Let's just say that. It hurts.
But.
And he already thinks I, like, retore my meniscus from a couple years ago. That's why you ordered the MRI. So, anywho, it's time with Audrey. I have to laugh at myself, because if I don't laugh, I'll cry and I'm all cried out.
No, I get you.
But, yeah, so there is another reason I will not put, especially or even when hiking, like, people, I've heard the argument so many times, like, oh, they're making that up, it's not safer, blah, 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 blah. It, you know, for me it is, and for a lot of people it is.
Yeah.
And that's simply for the fact that you can, and I've been doing it so long now, that, like, my feet are, they're more like hands. And the way that they can grip and pick things up or stop myself from falling, you know, if it wasn't for that. Now, if I was if I was brand new to it, maybe I wouldn't have been able to fall so well and catch myself.
Yeah.
But that just solidified for me why I'm going to, you know, keep barefooting. It's just better for me all around. So,
yeah.
When it was so cute, I had a little experience when I went, Saturday after I left here, I went and I took my son, we went to a zoo overnight, and during the day, so we went in the evening, and we got this, it was really actually really cool, like, you get this whole program overnight, we get to see nocturnal animals, we stayed the night there, and then we got a couple hours with the tour guides in the morning before the zoo opened, and then we were allowed to spend the whole day there, the whole rest of the day. So for the price, it was 100,000% worth it. It was amazing. But, like, so after the zoo opened, we were there for a little while. There's this one sweet little girl. She's probably about four, literally. And she goes, we were in the little birdhouse, and I had, like, the birds didn't want to leave my arm. And I was like, I think they think I'm one of them, you know. But so she goes, are you a princess? And I was like, that I am. I said, and I can tell you are too. I said, do you want to know how I know that? He said, because I'm part fairy princess. And we know. I said, but we're not supposed to tell people that. And she goes, oh, that's why you're barefoot, or that's why you don't have shoes. And I said, exactly. But the way she said it was just like in a way that she knew. She's like, she's supposed to keep this secret, you know, not let anybody know who they are or whatever. It was so adorable. And
it's like a good experience.
It was
somebody knows
so,
that you're barefooting is quote unquote weird. But why does that have to be a bad weird?
Yeah. And it was just it was so, she's like, that's why I'm so bad. Like she knew she was fit.
Yeah.
But it was funny because like so many employees I know saw them and they didn't say a word until we were leaving this old biddy. Now, because it rained on us. And so my son, he's like, he's very uncomfortable in his shoes because he did wear shoes. And, you know, they told this woman, she's like, now, you have to have shoes on here. I was like, yeah. And I was like, well, I said he had them on, but I let him take them off, you know, because he got rained on. And, you know, I don't want to get foot rot or nothing. Well, that's fine for today, but because there was a lot of rain. But, you know, when they won't let you in. I was like, I looked down at my own feet. I was like, are you sure? I'd been there for almost 36 hours. And I had nobody tell me anything.
So you're about to leave.
Yeah, so I'm leaving. So we're leaving. I'm like, whatever, lady, whatever. It was just.
I love how when it goes like that, you're not going to say anything to leave.
I'm like, okay, whatever you say, hon.
And with the weather being nice, or like I've been barefooting just a lot more in general than I've been able to because of like cold sensitivities in my feet with like nerve issues and stuff. And then and it's even in my hands, I get it as well. So it's like really.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's just, like, yeah, like, I'm just very, sensory, sensitive with those, like, temperatures and stuff like that. It's like, my hands and my feet will get really freezing cold.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, sometimes, too.
Oh, my hands, they were getting numb from all the walls.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah,
but.
And so, like, I do have to be a little more careful in the winter, but at the same time with having a lot of inflammation issues. Sometimes, like, going outside when it's cold is, like, a nice ice pack. It's, like, a nice refresher, especially if I'm, you know, times when I've been inside a lot more. But since the weather's opening up, I don't really have restrictions the way that I do in the winter. And so I've had a lot of people, like, looking or, like, they're curious or, like, they almost want to say something. And I think some people, because I've had some of it's in places where I've talked to another store employee about it, but not in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're like, because I've gone to some places where, like, there's some store employees, like, they absolutely love my presence there. They're like, oh, my God,
yeah.
I'm a hippie chick or spiritual chick or whatever. They want to call me. Like, I don't know what they think of when they look at me, but I can, a lot of them just seem like, you know, like, they just enjoy my presence. And not to even be, like, egotistical, but I know that I give off a different energy than a lot of good people store because I can see how different I am in some certain shops and certain places because I just live in tune with my body. I live in tune with nature. Barefooting is a huge part of that. And I do have like a story I kind of want to get into that with like some of my hiking experiences that like both the viewers kind of remind me of because there's some similarities. But the stories you told anyways. And it's not like, oh, I'm better than everybody because I know other people can achieve this as well. I just think that despite the fact that, like, I have, you know, felt cursed at times, you know, with being neurodivergent, especially when I was undiagnosed and, you know, I was nowhere near figuring this out. Because
right.
I mean, going through the initial diagnosis process, it's a really long thing. But,
yeah.
You know, when I had slipped through the cracks, you know, and was just masking for so much, I constantly felt like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I'm broken. And so I think with having to, you know, figure out my neurodivergency and having this whole, like, autism diagnosis journey as an adult, but also just knowing that I was different from people because of that on some level, and then the issues with my physical health, like, and even issues with trauma, like, yeah, I have felt cursed at times because of that, but in a weird way, I'm also very thankful for myself, and I'm thankful for the people that have helped me in my healing journey, and not just a trauma healing journey, but healing my body, and just so much, and coming to terms with being neurodivergent. I'm really thankful for myself, though, because, you know, there's most times in my life where I was, like, a lock to the hole. Nobody knew what I was struggling with, and I've learned to be more vulnerable, which is something we should work on, but I recognize that there were times where I did carry myself
right
a lot. And so I'm in a place where, like, obviously I don't think bad things that happen to us are, like, really good things. Like, you know, I hate when people try to be too justifying with that. But I'm thankful for myself and the people who have supported me to get to the point now where I have gone so far with figuring out my different issues that I am so much more in touch with my body, my heart, and my mind, and the integration of all of those than, unfortunately, than most people are. You know, I look at, you know, because, like, I always know people would talk about how, like, even though, like, I don't, like, condone anything, of course, but, like, how people would always say that before, you know, marijuana was more recognized as a, like, medical substance and that it is now, you know, people used to always have, there's always this, like, conspiracy of, like, oh, marijuana is the gateway drug. And then I always have people go, no, trauma is. Because trauma is the biggest correlation with people, you know, using substances and abusing substances and with hard drugs and stuff like that, as well as just other toxic coping mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do have always had this belief that, like, trauma is the gateway in a bad way.
Yeah.
But I think to a degree, like, trauma is the gateway of breaking past societal BS. Because as you start to heal yourself and really take the time to overcome your trauma, like, you will get to a place where eventually where you're so in touch with yourself that other people aren't, even and with people without trauma. And obviously I'm not saying, like, trauma is a good thing. We all need to go through it. No. No. Because trauma is the poison of society. The events that made us go and have to have trauma, unfortunately, and what led to different things that mental health issues that come from trauma, that is the poison in society. But when you're taking the time to heal how the poison has hurt you, you realize the things in society that are poisonous, like apathy, you know, these greed mindsets, you know, when people are just, like, thinking of how they can be richer versus how can I add more value to the world and then be compensated for the work that I'm doing? Because that's a very different role than, like, in business. You know, there's some people, you know, and you'll see that very differently in different types of business owners, whether they're small or big on, like, a corporation level, whether or not they are, like, offering this service or this product in order to solve an issue, to make a difference, or if they're doing it just out of greed
mm-hmm.
and just money. And so I do think that a lot of people who go through trauma just feel so alienated on a different level once they get through their healing journey because they realize that they're different in other ways. And it's really hard and lonely at times because you realize I can't agree with society. I can't agree with the crap. I can't agree with, you know, just looking at people like numbers and you can't, and people, I think, especially with this consumeristic and the more harmful, you know, sides of capitalism where it's just like looking at things as items while, you know, people, like a lot of us barefooters and a lot of people that have had to heal and have gotten into holistic healing recognize that consciousness isn't just us. And, you know, so we have a broader idea of what consciousness is, or we even have a broader idea of consciousness within each of us as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That you do feel alienated, you do feel weird. And so I recognize that because of the stuff I went through and the work that I've put in, because some people don't put in the work and that's how they are just ingrained in the societal bullcrap and how they become a part of it, you know, but I've really taken the time and I know a lot of people around me that have really taken the time to kind of steer clear of that and to just nope, instead focus on transcending ourselves rather than being pulled back down and ignoring these things that we've been through. That you get to a point where you realize that you're really not like other people. And that's not an egotistical thing. It's just that, like, you've been put in circumstances that force you to break out of this in ways that other people haven't had to. Or even if they did go through things, rather than breaking through it, they just chose not to. So that is a personal strength as well. It's not just a circumstantial thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are times where, like, just the energy of people, you know, like, a lot, you can just tell a lot of the times, especially if you are somebody that is more in touch with energy, and I think a lot of barefooters are, even if we're not all spiritual, we're more in touch with our surroundings and the ebbs and flows within the surroundings, and it's, like, hard because I do recognize how some people are just so apathetic or so rigid or just so disconnected from others. And I come in and I'm sweet, I try to have conversations with these people.
Sorry,
like,
just kidding.
No, you're good. I know you're just teasing me. And
what she thinks.
I just try to connect with people, and rather than looking at it like, oh, you're just a useless employee, like you're just a
robot
in my day to give me what I want. And it's weird because I'll notice the difference of how like other people don't treat other people like people.
Oh no, I was at somewhere the other day, and I was trying to mind my own business because I'm very good at that. Yeah, I need that little laughy clip that Proof does sometimes. Anyway, so they were being like really rude to this employee. I could tell you, but I was sitting there and I'm just pretty much, that's not necessary, right?
Yeah.
And they looked like they would say something. They were like, it is. It's completely unnecessary. I said, I have no other words other than that. It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
And they looked like at first they wanted to like fight me, and then like they realized they were being a DB, and I'm like, standing there.
Yeah.
And they changed their tune though, which it could have totally gone the other way and I could have ended up in a fist fight in the middle of a Walmart, but I didn't that time, which is good because assault charges on my record. I can't be a teacher and I love being a teacher. So,
yeah.
But I couldn't though. They were just being really, really rude, and you could tell the employee was struggling to either A, not cry, or B, not hit. And I didn't want
both at the same time.
Right, and I didn't want this poor person to lose their job simply because this guy can't check his temper. So I was like, that is just completely unnecessary. Like, and then he did. It's luckily he changed his tune, and he has to, he's like, sorry, I'm having a bad day, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, but now they're going to have a bad day because you took your bad day out on them.
Well, and I've even had people that just have that kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
I assume because I'm having normal conversation with his employee while I'm actively getting my stuff, because like, if I have to shop or like behind the counter and stuff, or they're behind the counter and like, they get stuff for you, and that they can just come and talk over me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just
kind
of look at them long enough, and then they just realize they're being rude.
Mm-hmm.
Because even sometimes it's hard for me to say something because I'm like, I'm here, so I just stare at them until they acknowledge me.
Yeah.
And and so that's not the store worker's problem, it's just people. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm like,
because I hadn't even been talking to the employee. I just happened to be in the same aisle there, basically calling him an idiot. And I'm like, that is unnecessary. People don't deserve to be treated that way. Nobody.
And, and it's funny because it's like,
I didn't tell him he was being an a-hole. I didn't call him names or be mean. All I just said, make sure that is unnecessary. I'm like, literally, and what was really funny about it is that's one of the sentences I use with my students, and I'm a preschool teacher, and the fact that I had to use it with a grown-up was sad and funny, but
I get it, and it's like
people.
Funny to me though, because now in that shop where I have interactions where you can just tell other people, or even if it's like somebody that's getting a leave and just the way they are before they leave, like I'm always like, make sure I come in just like, hey, how are you? Like,
yeah.
Being a human about it. And, it's funny because I've...
Even if I'm in a hurry and I'm having a bad day, I try. And I've known I've snipped.
Human.
Yeah. But there have been times where I have snipped and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm having a bad day. This is not at you. I promise. This is all me. This is not you. Please don't take what I'm... I do. I'm like, it doesn't take long to say, please don't take my behavior seriously or against yourself. I'm having a bad day and I'm trying really, really hard not to give it to you.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But like... I thought it was an a-hole.
Yeah.
I couldn't keep my mouth shut. I tried.
No.
I tried to mind my own business. And luckily it turned out well. Again, I did not end up in a fight in the Walmart, but it could have gone that way. And I knew that. That's why I was, but.
Imagine what the headline
but
would
I'm,
be.
Yeah.
Barefoot patron called me out on his.
Yeah. Because they would have to throw that barefoot party and make it seem like I'm the crazy one because I'm barefoot. I'm like, yeah, but this guy's being a douche.
And that's what's so funny is because, like, I have two types of interactions where even if somebody doesn't say anything, it's just, like, the energy. And I have had a lot of issues with recognizing – sorry, my allergies are killing me. I've had a lot of issues with recognizing social cues in the past, not realizing that I was
right.
Autistic, and also – I've had a lot of circumstances during like the process of me getting diagnosed and just like things with like just toxic friendships that I've moved on from.
Things. And learning to know your own cues and behaviors. That's what's hard is paying attention to your own stuff.
Yeah, and realizing the way that other stuff can be misconstrued to other people because if they're understanding social cues, well, like even me, like sometimes people think that I don't care because when I'm listening, like I don't always show expression. Now, sometimes I get really into it, while other times it is harder for me to show expression, or I struggle to feel like I have to force reaction because I care and I'm there, but I'm like trying to listen, you know, too, or sometimes I'm just not as...
Well, and I'm horrible with eye contact. Like, even if I'm looking at you while we're talking, I might look near it. A couple times I usually watch your mouth move because that's somehow I hear it better, which is funny because I can still have a phone conversation and I don't see your mouth moving, but I know what you're saying. I'm weird. But anyway, but what people need to remember is, okay, so these are quote-unquote social nuances and social cues and whatnot, but we all have different social experiences to begin with. The
really
people I've been around are different. Yeah, exactly. And the people I've been around are different than the people you've been around and different than the people that they've been around. So it's like we all are going to perceive them differently. There's, some of them tend to become more widely recognized, I guess. But... And they could be cultural, too. Like, some people, like, some cultures, if you don't look them in the face, you are scum of the earth. But if you do, you're, for others, you're scum of the earth. Like, you know what I mean? It,
it depends
on who you are and who you're talking to.
Well, here's an interesting difference between, like, American culture and, you know, several Eastern and Asian cultures is we think of you have to look an older person or authority figure in the eyes in America, because that means that you're respecting them, you're listening them. But from what my understanding is too, like in different psychology classes where we brought up like differences in culture, more so like the sociology ones and psychology. But when I was getting my like psychology associate is what I mean. So any classes like that, and even communications, getting into like social cues, how in a lot of Asian countries that you don't look in the
right
or in the eyes,
it's disrespectful.
And so those are, it's the same thing on two completely different viewpoints, but who's to say that one isn't valid? And because, you know, so.
And if you don't know different cultural cues, you can't follow them anyway.
Yeah. And even think about how, like, social etiquette used to be a taught thing, and now we're not even taught that. So there's certain things that people just assume are ingrained. And
assumes you're born knowing.
And some people
like, I thought my kid knew not to microwave a Hot Wheel once, and guess what? He did not know that. We had to buy a new microwave and almost lost the house. So, something.
Some things you do.
You don't think you have to teach, but you do.
There are some things that, yes, may be ingrained social cues, but research now shows they're only ingrained in autistic or neurotypical individuals.
Right.
So people with ADHD aren't going to be as geared towards some of them, but they may. But a lot of times people with ADHD have more of an innate understanding than autistic people, and that was something that I have. So with, you know, that I do struggle with recognizing social cues, I will be honest. But I've had a lot of experiences within the last year that have, and even just the last couple months, that have really forced me to recognize what social cues are and what they mean. Because I was interpreting them completely different the whole time and then realizing, that's what that means.
Yeah.
And
well, my problem
that are supportive, helping me through these conflict issues. Because for me, I don't always realize that there's something happening until the direct action is right in my face.
And so
the signs were there the whole time, but I was just oblivious to them.
Yeah.
And so having friends that have, like, helped me understand, like, oh, that's what that means.
Yeah.
That's why I felt gross and nauseous. Because for me, I feel the vibe, but the social cues do not get registered.
Yeah, you don't know why
you
feel the vibe.
Until I'm like, oh, okay.
Right. Well, and then my problem is, like, a lot of social cues, like, I recognize and I understand. I just don't have the patience for them. So I kind of ignore them and just still do my own thing. Not in a rude way. Like, if I'm in the boss with my office, no. Let me rephrase that. In the office with my boss.
I don't shoot that.
I would not be my boss. Gross. Anyway.
My brain just flipped it around, so I didn't even understand.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, it's you. Yeah. Anyway, if I'm in the office with my boss, I'm going to follow what social cues I know and understand, you know, because it's respecting, it's that I want to keep my job thing, it's, you know, that, you know. But, like, typically I'm just like, I'm not, like, I don't want to be a rude person to anybody. But it kind of just depends on the context, too. Funny because in, like, kind of, like, in my regular interactions, too, I've seen other people, like, when I go bowling or even in my classroom, like, become more relaxed with it because they realize it's not really that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. Like, some of these are not a big deal in all, kind of like shoes, they're not a big deal in every situation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So it's, like, the way you can be more relaxed and have more fun and kind of almost joke about what these nuances are in certain situations. But again, if I get called to the office, if I have to go talk to my boss, I'm going to still follow them because it's important. It's a tool in my toolbox that I'm going to need to use in order to keep a respectful atmosphere and not seem like I'm being, what's that word?
Non-compliant.
No. The
disobedient?
No. The thing I like to get written up for a lot.
Oh,
y'all, what is that?
Insubordinate.
That one. It's insubordinate. Disubordinate. Yeah, insubordinate. So I don't want to be insubordinate.
Yeah.
But, like, when we're in the same room with, like, everyone on the same playing field, we're not, no one's subordinate to anybody and no one's superior to anybody. We're all on the same level. Let's just chill and have fun and be relaxed about life, you know?
And for those of you that don't know, it is Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month. So we did kind of want to take a little more time during this month to talk about these things. Yes, we talk about being neurodivergent on a regular basis, but we do want to give a little more information. And also, barefooting does have a role for a lot of neurodivergent people, but it's also a barrier for a lot of neurodivergent people.
Yeah.
And I do want to get more into the sensory stuff, and I do have a story to tell that kind of overlaps with these things. From my experiences, I help others to hear.
Yeah, I had to pop my shoes off a lot at work this week to ground myself because it was an overwhelming kind of week. But you know what? We all met our goal, and that was I guess we had two goals, really. Survive, and the kids need to learn at least one thing. Through this entire week, me and Kim learned something, and I have one little girl sitting
in. You have, like, little babies, so it's
true.
Probably harder to...
Yeah, but I got one baby who's now army crawling, and one, she walks around, and we do the song. I'll use your name because I don't want to, you know, confidentiality raises, but, like, okay. When they're done eating, and I'm white helping them clean up, it'd be, all done, Phoenix, all done, Phoenix, all done, Phoenix, you ate all your food, right? It's super cute, whatever. She sings it now. She walks around the room. So if it were you, she could just be going, all done, Phoenix, all done, Phoenix. Obviously, she uses her own name. But it's so, I'm like, see? She learns. Oh, it's so fun.
So cute.
But anyway, so we got that going. And all my babies have got a new skill this week. And we survived. So, mission accomplished. Anyway, I interrupted you. But I was just thinking about little Miss Baby Phoenix. Who's not really named Phoenix, but, you know.
I know what you mean. Confidentiality.
Yeah, and just in case any of my coworkers are listening or parents or whatever, because I tell them about the show, I want them to know that I'm going to at least still use my, you know, code of ethics and everything.
Yes, of course.
Like, it doesn't matter whether it's on the radio show and nobody's listening knows these people. It's still not right for me to use their name.
And it's just a consent of privacy thing.
Exactly.
But also, I do kind of want to, like, discuss a little bit more on, you know, masking and forced masking versus natural masking. And so a lot of us who either have autism or even ADHD can mask to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have our own natural masking where we don't show the disorder in ways that other people do. We show it in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to, like what you said about, there's a completely different thing when you're in the office with your boss.
Oh, like, and it's basically knowing the situation. Yeah.
Or you're in a more chill setting. Mm-hmm. Or even sometimes in the classroom itself, especially with younger kids, I think mm-hmm. it's important to show that we need to stop with masking. Now, if a kid...
Questions the best, because I don't have to mask at all. I love it.
Okay. With kids, and you were helping them also, I'm sure, learn that it's okay to be themselves. And that mm-hmm. also shows that any particular, you know, those, like, babies, those little kids, or, like, toddlers, that may not be diagnosed yet, they can, like, show themselves, and that'll help them actually getting mm-hmm. help they need than having to hide it. Because I know for me, I became really good at masking it, and I realized that.
Oh, yeah, that's why I even like to tell, I'll even tell them, you know, be like, I'm feeling very frustrated right now. I'm going to breathe so I can show, so I can handle it better. Mm-hmm. That way they know frustration is a valid feeling, but there's other ways to deal with it, other ways to show it, you know.
Yeah. And forced masking is a trauma, and this can start early on with kids, and they're being berated for behaviors that they just don't naturally understand,
mm-hmm.
or for behaviors that aren't actually a behavioral issue. Really, it's just this whole thing of control. And I think there's a whole thing with control when people want to force masking in social settings where it's really not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it comes from a power thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think it comes from a power dynamic of just trying to be like, I'm better than you, and it's tied into ableism even.
Yeah.
And now I understand that if a kid, you know, like tics or just overstimulation behaviors or their sensory behaviors are completely distracting to a classroom at times. Okay.
Or sometimes it can be harmful, but you just teach them.
Yeah, and even teach them not to. Even if it's not harmful, but it's distracting, okay, give them a chance to go in the hallway or go to another room where they're able to do what they need to do. And I think that's how most, like, this special needs stuff, it really needs to be an integration. And even what I've seen integration in my own experience with other people that were on IEPs and stuff like that, it's really not that good. It's really not. And especially in the school district I went to, that is nothing against the aides and the fully qualified teachers.
Mm-hmm.
That's nothing against them. It's really against the district, the resources and the policies. So I don't blame really any of them there, except for maybe one, but I'm not going to get into that, actually. But that
yeah.
was an independent person that was does not reflect the rest of the staff. But I do think it needs to be something, and I'm sure that there were times where even for myself, I would have benefited from getting some accommodations definitely in school. I used to think that it was my mental health issues why I used to cry in class, especially when I got in high school, because I would get so overstimulated. I would struggle so much with understanding something because it wouldn't click for me as quickly or as easily as the way it did for other students. But because I outdid a lot of the students in my classes or was within, like, you know, the top students of that class, that grade or whatever, so, you know, I did graduate 10th in my class despite literally thinking that I literally was not going to live to see graduation multiple times because my health, my mental health, being hurting,
mm-hmm.
like that was so bad. I went through a lot of things, you know, I'm not going to get into. And, you know, so, yes, I've always been smart. But that was the thing, is teachers would look at me and be like, oh, well, you're smart, you'll figure it out. And not understanding that it does take a little bit longer and it takes more certain other steps or things for things to make sense for me, or if I'm overstimulated, and then when I'm overstimulated, like, I would just cry, and I thought that, I thought it was just some kind of other mental health issue, not realizing that I'm overstimulated.
Yeah,
I didn't understand that. That is what I was feeling all the time.
And I would take that the you're smart, you'll figure it out thing. I'm like, no one says you're stupid. No, I'm not saying I'm stupid. I'm saying I need help to figure it out.
And I have a lot of teachers that would expect.
I'm saying you're a teacher. Teach me.
And I do not mean this in a bad way to anybody, but this is just actually, like, legitimately my experience, is I would end up teaching a lot of kids with IEPs in my class because our school is understaffed, or a lot of our classrooms are bigger, and not because of the amount of kids that went to school, but a lot of those classes I were in that were advanced, they would just lump up everyone in the grade into this class
mm-hmm.
or into classes or whatever.
Yeah.
And so there were kids that were smart but were on IEPs and did have more recognizable issues or more recognized issues
mm-hmm.
even too, that I would have teachers be like, oh, well, can you explain the student help them because it was so good. So it's funny, too, because realizing that a lot of the things I was praised for were also autistic traits,
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
the way that I am so systematic and organized with information, which I hold on to it. I'm a logic over emotional person.
Well, and once you learn it, you just about don't forget it.
Yeah, and I am very detailed.
However, with mine,
really
can
get into it.
I can learn it enough to I never had to study for tests. Because it would stick long enough, cause, you know, as long as they made it make sense.
And I'd ace the test, and literally half the crap I learned in school, I don't know. I know the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, and I love algebra and English, which is really funny. Because most people either like math-type stuff or literacy-type stuff. I love them both. But stuff like in those subjects, but when it comes to like social studies, oh, my God, my husband will bring up like political-type stuff.
Going into with everything.
And I look at him, and I'm like, I don't remember that. He says,
Oh, no, that's me.
No. I'll be like, when were they president? Or whatever. Like, I'm so bad with, like, not geography. Well, geography, yes. But I meant,
oh, I love geography.
Cheeseburgers, social studies. Like, I'm just like, okay.
Dude, but again, like,
I don't know.
Those, like, autistic traits, like, for me, like, I always got a 70 or not.
Ask me about some art and some crystals, though. How to write a poem. And how to do the Pythagorean theorem. I'm theorem, whatever. I'm your girl.
I do have issues with visualization and making up images in my head. I do have, I always had a really strong imagination, though.
Oh, I see in pictures.
But I also, I do see in pictures and concepts, but I see things in graphs sometimes. And not like a graph, like in science, in math, but more like a concept graph in my head. But if I do, I don't have like a photogenic memory, but the reason why I remember things so accurately is because I can remember exactly what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
If I do remember them, but I have a hard time creating an image out of nothing.
Gotcha.
But I can see things. And so that's why, like, when I describe things and like what I see almost like in that picture. And so I was always like, no, I'm very directionally challenged on an individual level. Like, I'm always like looking where the sun is, looking for anchor points in my city, like, you know, of, like, direction. So I'm directionally challenged, but I was always really good at seeing pictures when I memorized stuff with geography as a kid. But then when I did Global Issues my senior year, like, I always got a 97 or even 100% when we were in Global Issues and we would do geography. We ended up not getting into Latin America because COVID came during my senior year and right when we were supposed to get into that stuff.
It's funny that you and I both graduated the same year.
Yeah, because you got your associate degree that year, I forgot. And
I think the graduation, though. Well, they did it a year after, but we were on vacation, so I didn't get to go. I would call it Rada, which is much better in my opinion. Anyway.
We did Europe. Currently, and then we did Soviet Europe, and I still didn't get confused between the two, because to me, like, they're completely different concepts in my brain. Well, to other people, they may overlap more. Like, so I see completely different schemas and images, and so, like,
they're the same shape, but different map.
And what most people don't know is that there's actually 50 countries in Africa, and I remember when we did that, I think that was the first one we started out with, and even to this day, like, I can tell people where certain countries are, they're like, what? And I'm like, dude, I remember this senior year in Global Issues, like, it's just in my brain. Now, I probably need a refresher to know all 50, because it's been closer than 3.5, because this is, like, the first quarter of senior year. And so, you know, and it's been almost 3 years since I graduated. And so, yeah, I probably need a little refresher, but there's definitely things that I thought of, or if I think of a certain country, I can think of, like, the ones surrounding it, but I see it as a picture, not as a, not in words, the way that some people just have, like, their words, they think of, like, I see the picture in my head, and the picture, I'm like, okay, they have the picture. So, you know, I can think of things differently, but, you know, it's very interesting, and I do kind of, like, want to get off this part of it and get into, like, more of the sensory aspect, not really just the barefooting and my own experiences with, like, hiking and barefooting and even with my physical body as well. But it's a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, do go undiagnosed, and I always, like, used to watch Big Bang Theory a lot, and I always related to Sheldon certain ways, and I always thought, like, oh, I'm, like, if you mix Sheldon and Penny's personalities, or I related to a lot with Amy, but then I've seen, you know, autistic adults, a lot of them have, you know, been diagnosed, you know, since they were kids, talking about how, like, characters that were autistic coded but never acknowledged, and a lot of times, like, the official show, they'll only say that Sheldon has Asperger's, because, and OCD, But the reason why, and he probably does have OCD. Some people with autism do actually have OCD. I thought I did the longest time. I don't. I have friends that actually have OCD. It's very different mm-hmm. than what it is. My strong preferences and weirdness about things.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah. And so I've seen people talk about those are autistic characters or one they won't bring up because it does ruin Big Bang Theory. When you watch the show and realize that they're literally just bullying Sheldon, or Sheldon doesn't understand social cues, everyone else in the room does, and no one will just be honest and tell him straight up. It's like this joke they're playing on him, and it's like I've been in social experiences like that.
Yeah.
Where it really was malicious, too.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it until much later and having to learn, and this isn't, you know, ties into where I became.
I'm 40 years old and people still try that with me.
Social cues.
Oh,
it's great when I point it out and they know I know what they're doing. That's fun.
Yeah.
Because then they feel like idiots. And I'm like, that's good because you are.
And
I'm a little petty sometimes. What can I say?
I remember this email that I was trying to bring up earlier just now, actually, with the realizing the social cues. We kind of, like, got off that and it's fine. So, like, I was just realizing for those that listen, you're probably like, wait, what? At times. I realized, it's, like, weird because I'll have two different types of experiences when I go into a place barefoot where some people, it's, like, you can tell they think it's cool or it's almost like they get relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know how people are when, like, somebody's, you know, and we've all been there when if you work in, like, a restaurant, a store, whatever, you kind of just, like, tense up when people come in. You're just like, oh,
yeah.
Now, and it seems to me where it's like they're much relaxed, or those people that are more comfortable with, they're like, oh my gosh, they're like almost excited. They're like, oh, a great person.
A real person.
Like a real person's going to treat me like a real person too, and rather than like a robot that comes in here and treats me like a
robot.
Because
you can imagine, even if you're not a barefooter and you see somebody, you know they've dealt with some stuff with people, because you deal with people on a regular basis. So you look at them and you know they've already dealt with it, and they'll most likely.
And I think a lot of people also too, they just fear, they recognize that I'm not going to harp on them about all of these social nuances that don't matter because I'm just being myself, and shoes are just a social nuance. It is a valid
really?
Choice for people that choose it, but the expectation of it is just a social nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of cultures outside of America, outside of countries similar to us, where, and even within some countries that are quote-unquote similar to us, where barefooting is completely normalized, or it is the normal.
I can't tell you how many times I've read comments on, like, the Barefoot is Legal Facebook page, where people are like, wait, this is really a thing? Like, you actually have to fight for, like, this is actually an issue in your country? And, yeah, it is. Yes, it is. Like, they're just, it's not even a thing for them.
I'm pretty sure I even heard someone talking about on TikTok that is a, they're from Spain, and but they're, like, a citizen here, and they are, like, they ended up coming here for school, ended up falling in love, you know, got married, became a citizen, a kid, family. They're talking about the culture. So they've even talked about, I can't remember her name, but she's even talked about the cultural differences of raising children and some of these social nuances. But I feel like she brought up at one point talking about, like, how barefooting is even in beach cities in America, it's a lot more, like, stigmatized than it is in Spain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which makes no sense. Like, why would you wear your shoes on the beach? You want sand gritting on their feet.
And in a lot of other countries where it's more normalized, shoes is more of a safety thing.
Right.
And they are looked at as more of a safety tool. And they are sometimes a little more rigid in certain settings about wearing shoes. But often in times you'll find that in a lot of countries, I'm not even just talking about Spain, a lot of them when they have these rules, there's a lot more reasoning to their rules.
Other than
because.
The argument I got at one restaurant who, again, didn't say anything to me until I was leaving. Like, you're going to let me run around the whole time, and then sure, when I'm leaving, be like, you got to wear shoes. And when I was like, why? That's just how it's done. Or that seems pretty, no, what did he say? It seems pretty standard. I was like, yeah, same. Bye. I'll be back later without shoes. You know, but, like, it's the same thing. That's his argument. It seems pretty standard. Okay, that's not a reason.
Yeah. And, you know, wearing shoes, it really is. It's a social nuance. But at the same time, there's sometimes I go into a place and I can just tell somebody wants to say something right away now. Like, I'm able to recognize it a lot clearer than, like,
yeah,
this person can get all huffy and puffy about me, and it's not just because I'm a random person in the store. And it's just,
right.
Yeah. And But, like, I haven't really had anybody say anything. I've been barefing a lot more, and I'm just kind of, like, say something, I dare you. And I think maybe because I give off that, maybe I'm giving off that energy, say something,
that's
I dare
not,
you.
Well, that's what I always say, because I'm always, like, confidence is key. The more confident you are going into somewhere,
the less likely people are to say something.
It
doesn't have to be, like, oh, I don't think anyone's going to say anything to me because I'm completely justified.
Right.
Because the thing is, a lot of people that have had to learn confidence for being social outcasts for whatever reason have had to, and this is obviously why the barefooters, and even our divergent people and more, that anybody that's ever been considered a social outcast knows that they're probably going to get some backlash. They're going to be expecting it. Confidence, in a lot of ways, true confidence, because a person can have confidence because they've never been challenged, because of certain privileges, because of entitlement, because of the way they grew up, because of coddling.
That's cockiness.
They can, and it may not come off, though, as normal cockiness that we're probably, like, you know, so used to or imagine. I've met some people that they're not horrible people. They're not necessarily cocky, but unfortunately their confidence comes from the fact that they've never been challenged.
Right.
And it's not that they're pretending to be somebody else, but they just fit into society's standards better. Well, and they may not even like it. And that's where some people can not realize they have privilege because they don't recognize it because they've never been challenged, or they don't recognize they've had certain things kind of handed to them. Because even
right.
if hard work was something that they were taught, they still weren't put in situations where they actually had to work in high school, you know, for themselves. Like, it was more of like, oh, it's like a responsibility lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not necessarily what their parents tried to set them up for failure, but some people have confidence because they've never been challenged.
Right.
While a lot of us, like barefooters, neurodivergent people, others that, you know, can understand ostracization,
mm-hmm.
you know, our confidence comes from, and that can also, you know, have its differences within the people I'm talking about now,
mm-hmm.
and our confidence more so comes from being challenged and being like, I don't care if you're going to challenge me because I know that who I am as a person is enough.
Right.
I will not be bullied anymore. I will not be abused. I will not, whatever. Like, and bullying is abuse. People abuse workers and act like it's not abuse because they don't think anything of it. And even if it's labeled bullying, people act like bullying isn't abuse. A bullying on all levels is a type of abuse.
Agreed.
Regardless of what type it is.
Yeah.
And I do think that there is some, you know, social control with people that want to force a lot of the social nuances that really should only be needed in certain situations. Like for myself, I recognize, you know, with autism, now it obviously depends on the severity of your symptoms, and there's also differences in people's natural ability to mask. But in general, things like ABA, which unfortunately people don't realize that is corrupt,
right.
The only reason why it quote-unquote works is because you are forcing and even abusing, because you're also, like, at this point, you're violating a person's even body autonomy, their authority over themselves, where it goes beyond teaching them safe things and instead becoming this whole, like, trying to erase it or cure it.
Right.
That is very harmful, and all it is abuse making them mask more, and it's actually causing all of these issues with cortisol and other hormones that are then wreaking havoc on the body and that go unaddressed.
Right.
Until later on, and sometimes never addressed depending on the type of rights that the person had taken from them even, because
right.
they're a huge part of that. But what I have learned from myself and experiences and other people and through research, that when you are allowed to unmask and be yourself,
mm-hmm.
when you are in those situations where you have to mask or have to function based on a certain code, it's actually a lot easier. It is a lot easier because when you are forced to mask within that abuse cycle, you have all these high levels of cortisol, which are tied into overstimulation, because overstimulation causes high levels of cortisol. So when you're overstimulated, you still have to keep masking. Masking for too long causes overstimulation. When you're already overstimulated, it gets harder to mask. When you're already having to mask for long periods of time, when you get overstimulated, it's harder to combat. It's back and forth.
Right, right. Not hear you.
And so you have to, unfortunately, yeah, sometimes in certain situations, act a certain way. But when you're system, your nervous, literally your central nervous system is more regulated, it is easier to behave in certain ways. And forced masking, and even sometimes, and forced masking can sometimes look like our choice because it's something we want to do or whatever, whether somebody's genuinely like abusing us or we're having to force ourselves to fit in somewhere because of whether or not it's abuse, but because of just treatment and, or just kind of energy that people give off. In a situation, yeah, it makes it a lot harder when you're having to mask because your system, your central nervous system is dysregulated because of it, especially with forced masking and abuse cycles. So it's kind of like with emotional regulation, and this does overlap with us as well. Because contrary, people think we are not robotic.
Right.
When you and are forced to never show your emotions ever, you're more likely to just blow up or fall apart or break down.
Because you don't know how to help in a healthy way shift them.
Yeah, and you also don't know how to regulate them in general.
Right.
And so when people are given the space to leave as they need to have whatever they need,
mm-hmm.
you know, an emotional setting, or they have the safe place to get into their emotions and to be emotional, it makes it easier for their emotions to not spill out when in stressful
mm-hmm.
situations. And it's the same thing with overstimulation. And both often occur with people who are autistic and even with ADHD. And
right.
So I do think it's important for people to understand this with Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month, being that's what April is, and to understand this. And when we're allowed to be ourselves in social settings with our friends, with family, with non-high-pressure stake settings, we actually do so much better in high-pressure stakes. And actually,
mm-hmm.
the funny thing is, a lot of reasons why a lot of us get undiagnosed is because of how well we handle things in a stressful
thriving in chaos
environment. Because I know, at least for myself and, you know, people who have autism that are similar to me, we are able to just shut off our emotions,
right,
which
right.
then can cause problems later on.
Use logic versus emotional.
Yeah,
thinking.
Because we just put that logic above. And so because of that, we are able to just kind of push our emotions down, and we're able to become a lot very logic and robotic-like. And I think that's why people perceive us as robotic-like, is because we can just look at things very systematically in a crisis. But we're able to do that better when we are given those safe places to be ourselves. And it's one thing that if something in a classroom with a child, like I was talking about kind of earlier, is causing harm to others, or, you know, we do need to figure out, you know, in those circumstances, how to make sure that everyone is safe, you know. And like with the kids I watch, they're allowed to have their emotional reactions. I get needing to throw things and needing to scream and maybe needing to hit things, but I always tell them, like, you do that in your room. I'm going to have you do that in your room. So that way you're in a safe place to have your outburst, but everyone else in the house, in the family, whatever, also has their safety taken into consideration. And I'll be like, you know, if you want to talk to me about it, you can. Like, I am a safe place to talk about. But, you know, if you're going to be throwing things, hitting things, and having your outbursts, do it in your bedroom, do it in a safe place, do it in another room. So that way everybody's safety is taken into consideration, and that's really what it is. That's what's really important. But if a kid is just being quote-unquote disruptive, it doesn't mean they need to be reprimanded if their ADHD or autism symptoms are causing them to be disruptive, but nobody is endangered or there's not a threat. Give them a safe place to work through and get out, you know, their stimming behaviors or those disruptive behaviors
without making them feel like they're broken or they're abusive or they're toxic or they're hurting anybody, when they're actually not hurting anybody, they're just causing a distraction. And then when it is an issue of safety and possibly hurting someone, make sure that those are addressed differently. We need to remember these are different issues happening and we need to kind of treat them differently, even if they have the same underlying cause. Because we do want to make sure everyone's safety is taken into consideration, but when a neurodivergent kid is having these disruptive behaviors that aren't a threat to anybody else, but are just disruptive, when you are forcing them to hide those, that is abusive to them. When they have to hide normal behaviors, just like talking too much, talking to themselves, singing, fidgeting, not being able to sit still, maybe needing to stand up while they, you know, do a lesson or work on something. Those aren't things that are threatening anyone's safety. Those are things that may be considered disruptive. So giving them those places to get that out and know that, okay, like, yes, this is distracting others. But being able to take themselves out of the equation when they can still be themselves, find their safe place to do that and do that now versus those more explosive emotional traits that may occur. They don't occur in everyone, but can occur. Those more explosive, you know, throwing things, hitting things, being to scream, giving them a safe place to do that and then making sure everyone else is safe. You know, and being able to remove yourself from the situation is a similar thing, but those are very different things. And
I
then
scream for my night for you when you were a kid.
Yeah, and that helped me a lot. And that's something that, like, you know, I've reflected upon when, you know, giving the kids I watch their safe places for their emotional outbursts. And that was a big reason why I understood why they needed to have this emotional outburst, even if it was threatening to somebody else. Like, okay, go have that outburst in your room. Make sure everyone else is safe. Make sure you have a safe place to do that where you're safe and everyone else is safe.
Yep.
And so that's what's really important is to understand. And then afterwards, when they have their outburst, sit down and have a conversation with them. Explain to them why things may come off wrong way, why those may seem threatening, why they may actually be threatening. And, you know, take the time to have a safe conversation with them to explain them and make sure that they're in the headspace to have that conversation.
Exactly.
Because if they're not, then they can't listen to you. So that's what they need, you know, sometimes you need to remove yourself or another person needs to be removed.
If you don't feel safe, you can't learn anything. And that's the biggest thing in my classroom is social emotional health. That's what I focus on most because if a child doesn't feel safe, they're literally the only thing they're going to be mentally focused on is how do I make myself safe?
Yeah.
How do I get safe?
They can't see anybody else.
Exactly.
And I can understand that.
You feel survival to, you know, at least, you know, emotional state from a survival state so that way they can, they know they're safe and then they can focus on something other than their safety.
And where you can even have those conversations. So I know for myself, even in the past or even reflecting when I was a child, even times when I feel so threatened or I feel so unsafe inside, where I can't always talk or communicate things with people the way I need to, or I don't realize how somebody could be taking me talking very loudly or yelling the wrong way. Because to me, when you're in those states, you can't, a lot of the times, now some people can shut down. Now I do have states where it's so bad where I shut down, I literally cannot talk. And while other times I can't talk at a level volume or especially when I was younger, I couldn't talk at normal volume. It's easier for me now to recognize those things or find techniques and tools. Or sometimes I just leave the room when I'm talking to my partner. I'm like, I can't talk to you right now. So I go somewhere else and then I'll come back in conversation. And sometimes I get boiled up again. I'm like, give me a second. I got to remove myself. So it's okay to go back and forth, like too, because there's sometimes where I'm like, I need to go somewhere else, like for a second.
Right.
And recognizing those limitations, give me a breather, let me figure out how to talk, and then I can finish this conversation. Okay.
Get my thoughts right so then I can get my words right.
And that's how you take accountability. You can't control your emotions necessarily, but how you become a better person for you is knowing when to remove yourself. And there are a lot of times in my life where I didn't know how to remove myself, or I genuinely thought I was in the space to have this conversation, and I wasn't.
Everyone, literally my go-to, I'm sure anyone can guess, is, obviously, I'm, like, always barefoot unless I'm at work, but is sometimes I will just go outside to stand in the yard.
Yeah.
So I'm touching the actual earth.
No, I do that, too. Like, I go, sometimes I'm talking to my partner when the weather's nice,
And, like, either we're having a conversation or I'm overstimulated and something's going off the wrong way. I'm like, let me just go outside real quick. Mm-hmm. Let me just go on the porch at least.
You're like, I know we're having an argument, fight, debate, whatever we call it, but I'm not walking away from this. I am taking time to straighten my thoughts.
To make sure I treat you better, which is how you are better and work through the issues with your loved ones better, is when you can take, as long as be like, I cannot talk to you right now. I cannot be around you right now. And I had people that wouldn't allow me.
Yeah.
And I had a people in my life that wouldn't allow me to be able to step out of those conversations for a second. But then that, and, you know, and in environments like that in childhood, I've had to really overcome to learn how to talk to people, because I'd be put in situations that I overstimulated. I wasn't allowed to check out and take a second, take a breather and come back, or I wasn't allowed to feel the way I do or struggle with what I was struggling with, that it made it a lot harder because I was forced to be in that interaction and with certain people, and then I couldn't handle it properly.
The thought of what you're actually feeling.
Because when you're overstimulated, you can't find the thoughts, and then when they're interrupting and miscommunicating, you're like, give me a second to figure out what I'm trying to say. Like, stop assuming. Like, that makes it really hard to even get your thoughts out, and then it's hard when you realize that people sometimes manipulate that, or you can just feel like you're being manipulated, even if that's not the person's intention. So when you feel unsafe on the inside, you can't always be receptive to other people because you're so consumed in what you feel that you can't see other people. And that's not saying that you're egotistical. That's not saying you're narcissistic. That's saying that you are in such a disrupted state within your central nervous system that you need to find a way to, like, regulate yourself, or at least cool off a little bit, or figure out how to have this conversation.
Egotistical gets a bad rap. Egotistical isn't necessarily, because that's literally how we describe children, is they're egotistical up until a certain point, because it's more just, it's not thinking they're the whole world or thinking everything is about them. Egotistical is more thinking, well, it doesn't hurt me. How does it hurt them? It's understanding that people, everyone is different and has different feelings about something. Like when a child goes up and hits somebody, it didn't hurt them, so they don't know why that child cried, because they're not hurt.
And that's also a struggle.
And that's what it is realizing that it's still a different situation for the other person.
And the way that you are communicating the idea of egotistical is also an issue within autism and even ADHD, where it's not egotistical in the sense of narcissism, but it's egotistical in the sense that because a lot of us can have trouble understanding our emotions, that we only think that our emotions affect us. We don't realize that when other people hear the things that have happened to us, we're talking about it, but it also has an emotional effect on them.
Right, right.
Now, yes, we also do have an emotional effect that we feel for other people, but sometimes we have a hard time realizing that we're even feeling that, so we don't always realize other people feel it. And so even when there are times where I'll get so overwhelmed with what other people in my life are going through, and I don't realize until I'm crying. I didn't realize this whole time that I was carrying around this weight until I'm crying. And I'm, like, talking about it. I'm like, and then I was, like, explaining it, or, like, when I'm there and they're my safe person, be around, like, and I'm like, oh, like, this is why I feel this way. Because it does because I'll be like, I don't know why I feel this way. It has nothing to do with me. Because what I'm feeling doesn't have anything to do with me. The reason why I feel this way is because of caring for people that I care about so much. But a lot of the times, especially for me and, like, people like me, the way that we want to help and be there for people is by fixing the problem. So we don't always understand our emotional reaction. We assume that it's something with us is why we're emotional, rather than just empathy. Because we think that our role is to fix it rather than feel it. We feel it.
Or to just be.
Or we think that we're egotistical by feeling it, so we self-identify, like, oh, there's a reason why we're feeling this. Because we can sometimes think that there's something wrong with us for feeling empathy at times. Because, well, it shouldn't affect us like this. We should just boss up and fix the problem for the people we love. When it's like, no, some people really just need that empathetic support, and there's nothing wrong with you for having that empathetic support for others. But I think another problem is that is because for autistic and even ADHD people, when we are more emotional, we're often very hypersensitive, and then people crap on us because of it. Because we care so much about social issues or animals or children or people or things that we care about, we're either too emotional suddenly. And so it's just constantly trying to keep it in check. But you have to remember, too, that egotistical component, as in just becoming overwhelmed with what you're thinking and feeling, that's a part of overstimulation. When you're overstimulated, it's hard to see past.
Right.
But barefooting has been a huge part of regulating my emotions, understanding my emotions and my body. It's been an integration of self on all levels. My body moves the way it should.
And, like, this whole thing with masking, shoes really are a social nuance. And it is a form of masking for a lot of us, feeling like we have to wear them for putting them on. We don't want them. And I'm sure there's people out there that don't even realize that that's what they're doing every time they're putting them on and why they hate it so much, because they don't understand that barefooting is legitimate and that this is just a social nuance. Or they don't understand how overstimulating shoes really are, because until I really found barefooting, I didn't understand how overstimulating shoes really were.
Right.
I didn't understand what I was experiencing. And so it's really...
Well, let's face it, for a minute, you probably thought I was the weird aunt.
I mean, probably, I never had shoes on. I never thought that was judgment. I mean, you are, but like...
I mean, you know what I mean, but...
But I just thought, like, oh, that's Audrey's thing. That's not a me thing either.
Right.
And it is. And being neurodivergent, like, I get not all of us, you know, are good without wearing shoes.
Hey.
Some people, it's an absolute sensory no-no. Total respect for you, okay? I'm not invalidating you at all. But for those of us that cannot with shoes, sometimes in the winter, it's harder to leave, not just because of my physical body, but that's also a factor. It's not just because, like, wearing shoes is uncomfortable, but part of it is the masking and knowing that.
That's like it shuts you off.
That for me, with having cold sensitivities, I have had to choose to wear shoes for one part of my health. Well, the autism is like, do not put me in shoes or else I will literally scream. I want to scream. And so it's like, I know that I'll have an adverse reaction to wearing them. So I have to mentally prepare myself before I can go somewhere where I know I'm going to have to wear shoes for another aspect of my health. And so it just creates this struggle, this challenge, frustration, anger even, because, you know, part of overstimulation can just be anger. And you don't even realize that. Like, there are times where I was just like, oh, I just have anger issues, not realizing how much overstimulation was driving my anger issues. And, like, a lot of my friends were, like, because I have even said, I was, like, because, like, reflecting on, you know, realizing, you know, I'm neurodivergent and what that means for me, like, where it's, like, and then also recognizing my trauma and how it's affected me. And back when, you know, I thought that I had other mental health issues that weren't, it was really just, you know, my trauma and autism.
Mm-hmm.
That it was more complicated, yes, but also, like, I'm really not an angry person. A lot of people brought that out of me. A lot of people, I had to become an attack dog, too, because they would disrespect my autonomy. I mean, like, literally, I mean, I'm just trying to violate my personal authority on different levels and, you know, within my trauma, that I had to become an attack dog. And I was gaslit into thinking I was crazy for standing up for myself. And so this is an experience a lot of people experience. I want you all to know you are not crazy, but
if you are, there's a reason for it.
Yeah. Like, there's something driving this. You're not just broken. There's a driving factor here. And that's what we want people to know with barefooting, with mental health, with all of it we talk about. We want people to know you are not broken. There's an underlying reason, and we just want to fix each other through what we're capable of. You know, and fix ourselves. And we put in the work to fix ourselves. And barefooting has been a huge component of that. So we want to throw in some other thoughts and feelings that are a part of the barefooting journey, not just, oh, I barefooted today. Oh, I went out in public today. Oh, standing up for my rights. Standing up for yourself and your personal circles, that is a part of standing up for your rights. So people may look at some of the stuff we say and say, oh, that doesn't relate to barefooting. Yes, it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it does. Especially when a lot of people who are neurodivergent need barefooting. And so, and they don't even realize it. So I would have all this anger, but now, like, a lot of people in my life are like, no, like, you're a really calm person. You're a chill person that is high energy.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm not an extrovert. I'm not. I always thought I was, but I'm an introvert. Now, I would always test as an ambivert on those kind of tests. But for me, I'm realizing is I am an extroverted introvert. I really don't do well in large social settings unless there's a reason or a skill, and that's kind of where the autism comes in. But with just public attention, like a lot of people with autism, and even think of Sheldon, every time he actually got public attention for anything he did, ready to be perceived, he'd freak out, shut down. I can't do this, because it freaks us out. And so a lot of people who are autistic, a lot of us are introverts, but there's different levels of our personality. Some of us are more
quieter. Introverts doesn't mean necessarily like shy or antisocial either.
And I had a teacher that explained this in high school, and it registered so much later that I wish it did. But he said between him and his wife that an introvert, extrovert can really just be looking at as what type of environments you thrive off of versus the actual personality. And in terms of being a quiet person and being a loud person, or like an actively or a lively person or high energy person, or just more of a, you know, just quiet, chill, like keeps to themselves kind of person. And so, you know, he was like, I'm a quiet person. I really don't need a lot of social interaction, but compared to my wife, I do thrive better in social settings. I take on more of a leader role. And that was, I mean, true, but like he's being a narcissist.
I mean, if you're a teacher, you got it.
Yeah. And then, you know, he was also like our marching band
right, direct.
And so, you know, he's talking about how, like, you know, I function better in social settings, but like he's a more quiet, reserved person, while his wife is the complete opposite, where she doesn't do as well in social settings, but she does need more of that community and that connection and is more high energy. And so it really made me think of, like, too, of how I am a more introverted person on a social level, unless there's like a logical purpose, reason, something I'm, you know, invested in. But when it comes to my close personal settings, I'm high energy, I'm talkative. And like this, I feel like if I was sitting on a show and being filmed, like a talk show, I'd probably have a completely different reaction than sitting in my own apartment while we do this radio show versus sitting on a set. Like, I would probably have a completely different reaction.
Yeah.
And I know I would. And I realize now that I would.
Mm-hmm.
And so barefooting, though, has been a huge role of understanding myself as a neurodivergent person, this emotional regulation we talked on, and coming into terms with my body, and we can talk more on that. My experience with hiking, some things I realized, we can actually talk more on that next week for a little bit. As long as scheduling goes according to plan as of now, we will have Tyler with Barefoot Autism Challenge on next week. I believe that will be the last Saturday of the month. He's been hosting Barefoot Autism Challenge. I've been taking photos. I've been taking part in the challenges. I've only posted them on my story. Posting for me as a neurodivergent person that goes with the introverted, extroverted thing, I take a lot of pictures, but I've been really overstimulated lately, and it's hard for me to post when I'm overstimulated. I have a hard time wanting to be perceived by people. So we will be posting more. We will have him on next week to talk about that. But be safe, guys. Keep living your best barefoot lifestyle. Do you have anything to say real quick?
Be kind. Help when you can. Don't be a jerk, as always. And if you have any more questions or thoughts for us, you can find us on Barefoot is Legal at Facebook. We have barefootislegal.org. Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all that. And yeah, we're here to answer questions, to help out in any way we can. So yeah, we will be back next week. We kind of lost track of time again. I know everyone is so surprised by that.
Shocker.
Yeah. So we'll be back on. I wasn't really looking at my computer much. We were just kind of talking and whatnot. So yeah, we will be back next week with Barefoot is Legal Radio.
Take care, folks.
Peace.